धन्यवाद अभिषेक. थैंक यू अभिषेक. एंड डियर लिसनर्स, साई राम फ्रॉम प्रशांत निलयम, द मोस्ट हैपनिंग प्लेस ऑन द प्लैनेट. Today is the last day of this month of February, and Prashant Nilam has seen wonderful events unfold in this short but lively month. You had the classic Tyagaraja Aradhanas by very distinguished musicians in the first week of this month, followed by a similar event by the students of Baba's Music College. And then there was the Kanchipuram Parthi Yatra. Over 2,000 devotees were here on their Parthi pilgrimage from the Kanchipuram North and South districts. They came in a chartered train and they arrived and performed in front of Bhagwan beautiful, soulful, devotional music. And then came the colorful Chinese New Year celebrations. And interestingly, it had a Tyagaraja touch to it. A Sai devotee of Chinese origin from Malaysia rendered on the Chinese New Year Day a Tyagaraja Kriti so proficiently with the right pronunciation along with swaras and all that. It was simply amazing to hear someone who can speak only Chinese and a bit of English sing Carnatic music. In fact, if you miss this, you must hear from our archives. But for those who have not had the chance to listen to this, here is a small glimpse.
Rama ninnu nammina, Rama ninnu nammina, Rama ninnu nammina, varamu Rama ninnu nammina, varamu Rama ninnu nammina, varamu gama sakala loka abhirama ninnu nammina, pagarisari Rama ninnu nammina, kadapag sadapagari sari Rama ninnu nam, tapag pada sadapag padapagari sari Rama ninnu nammi, gari sadapari sadapag pagari sari Rama ninnu, gari gari sadapari sadhi sadapag sadapagari sari Rama ninnu, tapag pada sari kasa pada sapa sari kasa sari Rama ninnu
So that was Mr. Chusan from Malaysia singing a Tyagaraja Kriti. In fact, we have interviewed him on Radio Sai Studios, and you can hear that in our series Tryst with Divinity shortly. So this happened on February 16th, 17th, and then followed a moving gratitude program by the students of Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School. After this came a two-day festival of awesome devotion by the people of the Adilabad district of Andhra Pradesh, which concluded on February 24th. So it has been, as you can see, like every month in the Prashant Nilayam calendar, another 4 weeks of adoration and dedication, remembrance and reverence. But this month also heralded another momentous event, and it actually went unnoticed. It is in this month, 55 years ago, that the Divine decided to launch a medium that would document and disseminate, amplify and simplify, deliver and carry forward the message of the avatar. On February 16th, 1958, on the holy occasion of Shivaratri, Baba unveiled for mankind the first issue of Sanatana Sarathi, the ashram's mouthpiece, the carrier of his priceless pearls of divine instruction. And in the message that Bhagwan had himself written in this very first issue of Sanatana Sarathi, Baba said, I quote, From this day, our Sanatana Sarathi is on the march at the head of the spiritual cohorts, this spiritual army consisting of the Upanishads and other sacred scriptures to subdue the evil and egoistic brood of injustice, anarchy, falsehood and license. May this charioteer fight for world prosperity and by making the drum of victory sound and resound, spread joy among all mankind. Unquote. Well, that is what it has done. Spreading peace and joy to humanity. That has been the mission and is the mission and will continue to be the mission of Sanatan Sarathi. A devotee from Newark who has been subscribed to this magazine for more than 2 decades now says, "The moment I see the publication in my mailbox, it instantly takes me away from worldly interactions and puts me right back in Prashanthi Nilayam with the feelings of what I am and who I am. It is a direct link to beloved Swami and the ashram. Each issue emphasizes the principal ingredients of life. Absolute love, wisdom, knowledge. It enlivens every cell of my being." In fact, everything about this hallowed magazine is so significant. Right from be it the day of its inception, the year of its birth, the place of its origin, the immense implication of its name, to the instruments that the Lord chose for this divine endeavor. In his very first public discourse on the occasion of Vijayadashami, that is the last day of Dasara, in 1953, when Bhagavan was only 27 years of age, Swami revealed, I quote, "The first 16 years of this life have been, as I have often told you, the period when Bala Leela, that is divine child sport, predominated. And the next 16 is being spent mostly in Mahimas or miracles in order to give santosha or joy to this generation. Joy and contentment are short-lived sensations. You have to catch that mood and make it a permanent position. Make it ananda, bliss." And then Baba went on to add, "After the 32nd year, you will see me active more and more in the task of upadesha, that is spiritual instruction, teaching erring humanity and in directing the world along the path of satya, dharma, shanti and prema, truth, righteousness, peace and love. Not that I am determined to exclude leela and mahima, that is the sport and miracles, from my activity after that. I only mean that re-establishing dharma, correcting the crookedness of the human mind and guiding humanity back to Sanatana Dharma, the eternal universal religion, will be my task thereafter." That is after Baba's 32nd year. This is what he revealed in 1953. And significantly enough, it is in this 32nd year of his advent that Bhagwan unfurled this unique conduit of his mission and message, the Sanatana Sarathi, on a no less significant day than the occasion of Mahashivaratri. It was February 16, 1958, as I mentioned before. And on this day, Bhagwan blessed the first few copies of this newest manifestation of his will and distributed freely to everyone present. In fact, it was a free magazine for many months after that. Later, only because of postal regulations and other reasons, Baba with much reluctance agreed for the subscribers to pay a nominal amount of just 3 rupees as annual subscription. So those were the initial years of Sanatana Sarathi. But why the name Sanatana Sarathi? Did Swami himself christen it? How did it all begin? And who were the hand-picked instruments for this mission? How did he shape and sharpen his chosen instruments so that they shine as effective conduits of his love and message? And also, most importantly, for media houses today, what is the take-home message from this spiritual magazine, which is translated into 13 Indian languages and as many overseas tongues, and being shipped every month to lakhs of subscribers for a cost much cheaper than a small size McDonald's French fries? So So these are some of the aspects we will be discussing today, dear listeners, in the next 60 minutes or so. But before we proceed further, let us take this opportunity to offer our most heartfelt salutations at the lotus feet of the one who indefatigably and ceaselessly has not only been safeguarding and securing our destinies, but also filling every moment of our lives with peace and delight. Dear Lord, please bless us so that we may never allow the forces of desire, anger, greed and jealousy to capsize our minds and fortify ourselves, to assert our inner divine strength, to always remain unperturbed with the vicissitudes of life. Please be with us, dear Lord. With this prayer, let's move on and welcome, dear listeners, to this yet another episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. And today, we celebrate the completion of 55 years of Sanatana Sarathi, the messenger of peace and love from Prashant Nilayam. And also, we will dwell a little on the unmatched, illustrious life of its first editor, Professor Narayan Kasturi. In fact, in his biography, Loving God, Professor Kasturi narrates how this magazine was christened as Sanatana Sarathi. It could have been any other name. Divine Love, Sai, Speaks, Unity to Divinity, Pathway to God, or anything. But why Sanatana Sarathi? Well, this is the story. This happened in the 50s. Professor Kasturi was at that time living in Bangalore in the area called Wilson Gardens. After having got some feelers that Baba is likely to come to the city, what Kasturiji had done is this. He knew that Swami would stay in the house of Mr. Vittal Rao, who is the father of Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath, the former principal and warden of the Anandpur campus of Bhagwan's University. He also knew the dry cleaner who attended to the washing and ironing of the door and window curtains of Baba's room in Vittal Rao's house. So the moment he got the information that the curtains have been washed, he knew Baba is coming. And at last, when the news finally leaked, Professor Kasturi placed the little daughter of his domestic help on a slab of stone facing his house with directions to keep watch for a big car and an orange robe. So he instructed his little girl to keep his eye for a big car, and his house was close to the house of Mr. Vittal Rao. So thanks to this meticulous arrangement, within minutes of Baba stepping into Mr. Vittal Rao's house, Professor Kasturi was in the veranda of that house. And Mr. Vittal Rao was surprised. He was amazed. He asked Professor Kasturi to wait and not proceed into his house. But interestingly, Baba himself spotted Kasturiji and he came towards him with his palm ready to fall on Kasturiji's shoulder. He wanted to bless Professor Kasturi. And what Baba said on this occasion is really something which shocked Professor Kasturi. Swami said, "Now, you have to work at Puttaparthi." These were actually initial days of his association with Bhagwan. So he could not understand what Swami was saying and what was he hinting. And then Baba immediately said, "A monthly magazine will start soon. Guess how is it named?" And Professor Kasturi confessed that he really cannot delve into Baba's will and find out what name Swami has chosen for this magazine. But Swami insisted on him suggesting a few names. So Professor Kasturi blurted out the Godward path, karma, dharma, prema yoga and so on. But Swami waved aside all these titles and then he himself announced, "I have decided to designate this magazine as Sanatana Sarathi."
Thank you.
సనాతన సారథి సాయిషా. సనాతన మీన్స్ ఇటర్నల్, ద టైమ్లెస్ వన్, అండ్ సారథి మీన్స్ చారియటీర్. వాట్ దిస్ మీన్స్ ఇస్ రికగ్నైజ్ గాడ్ యాజ్ ద సారథి, ద చారియటీర్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ లైఫ్. ఈల్డ్ హోల్ హార్టెడ్లీ టు హిస్ డిరెక్షన్ అండ్ రీచ్ యువర్ డెస్టినేషన్ ఇన్ గుడ్ షేప్. It is a clarion call to cleanse our hearts and souls and create an ambience for Him to install Himself in us and lead us onto truth, goodness, joy and bliss. In 1962, Again, on the auspicious evening of the holy festival of austerity, the celebration of Shivratri, while enunciating the virtues and vital mission of this hallowed magazine, on its fifth anniversary, Baba declared, "The Sanatana Sarathi is the result of my sankalpa, my utsaha, my venture, my resolve, my ananda, my bliss. Nothing can stand in the way once I have decided on any step." That is what Bhagwan said in 1962. The Sanatana Sarathi is a product of his divine love to share love and transform every being into a beacon of love just as he is. And so from its very beginning, Swami took great care of it. He personally visited Bangalore to Vichar Darpan Press in Avenue Road and bought a foot operated treadle printing machine along with a case of Telugu and English types. He set up the Sri Satyasai Press in Prashanti itself right next to his residence in the late 1950s. He himself appointed people and selected volunteers to serve in this Satyasai Press. He visited the press every other day to correct, direct, inspire and instruct the people there about its production. He laid down clear and austere guidelines with respect to the content and format of this magazine. He himself even edited articles on many occasions. Swami was concerned about every single detail. And just like a mother would sacrifice everything and go to any extent to take care of her just born infant, Swami too embarked on an exercise that was hitherto never before done by any standards in any age. The Lord decided to take the pen himself. And this was perhaps the greatest demonstration of Swami's immeasurable love and immense concern for Sanatan Sarathi and through Sanatan Sarathi to all mankind. It was truly epoch-making. Imagine God himself writing week after week. Imagine if he had the Bhagavad Gita scripted by Lord Krishna himself and not by a third party. Imagine having Lord Rama's life story in his own handwriting. Imagine a Bible tabled in black and white by Jesus Christ himself. For the first time, the avatar acceded to document his message himself. Perhaps this is the best way the purity of his preaching could be preserved and the destiny of mankind could be rewritten to save it from impending peril in this present age of Kali. And so for an astonishing 318 months, spread over more than 2.5 decades, Baba continuously wrote for this divine publication. Starting from February 1958, Swami painstakingly penned, however tight be his schedule, an article every month which was either an exposition of divine love, an explanation of deep philosophical thought, an enlightening dialogue between the seeker and the master, or a narration of entertaining yet elevating divine sport relating to his earlier manifestations which revealed instances of his earlier actions and their inner divine intentions. Like never before, revelations, expositions, explanations and instructions flowed from his pen week after week, month after month for 2.5 decades. And all these streams of divine grace and illumination that Swami wrote till October 1984 for this magazine were later compiled into volumes, and that is how today we have the Prema Vahini, the Dharma Vahini, the Sutra Vahini, the Bhagavata Vahini, the Ramakatha Rasa Vahini, the Gita Vahini, and so on. And who is the one who translated all these magnificent works into English month after month and later compiled them into books? Who is the one who had the privilege of going to Baba every month and receiving directly from his hands a fresh diamond of divine instruction and direction? Who is the one who was almost Baba's right hand, so to say, not only in managing the magazine, but also in running the ashram in those days? In fact, it was another master stroke in the divine master plan. A man of supernormal caliber and competence, Professor Narayan Kasturi, the first editor of this prized magazine, who had a plethora of popular Kannada and English literature to his credit, and also had served as assistant director of the All India Radio. In fact, he was the one who named the All India Radio Broadcasting Service as Akashavani, which has stuck permanently since India's pre-independence days, and it continues till this day. Once Professor Anil Kumar, reflecting on Professor Kasturi's literary gifts, had this to share.
And Kasturi's style of speech is again fantastic. He told me, Anil Kumar, instead of speaking that and this or different topics, different matters, different points, making it avial, a mixture, better you follow this procedure, he said. I said, what is it? Take one poem. Aramachandrude, Aramachandrude, Swami says that. And give one or two illustrations. Anandabalude, Anandabalude, Tanavari Gurtimpa Tharali Vache. Give one or two instances. Ah Mahavishnuve, E Mahivishnuve, Tanayamaluni Chekanagavache. Give one or two instances. So in support of every statement, give one or two instances or experiences, link up properly, end up with the main theme of your talk. That is the Prusikasturi's technique. So it, instead of making it a variety, at the end of which audience are left nowhere, they will not be able to say what we spoke, excepting the sound. But Kasturi's presentation is like that, that we'll never forget for a lifetime. Because it has got a continuity, a beautiful link, a beautiful connection between episode to episode on a particular theme that we have to learn from him. And another unique feature of Kasturi's style of presentation is humor. Full of humor. We people consider spiritual talks a serious matter. Spirituality is not to be serious by any standard. Seriousness is sickness. Bliss is God. God is bliss. Yesterday someone was speaking on TV. Ravi Shankar, I believe, Art of Living. He said, smile is an indication of success, he said. That is more than 100% true with Bhagwan Sri Satchai Baba. He smiles and smiles and make you smile. That's what it is. So, we are mistaken when we think that our talk should be serious, it should be profound, it should have depth, that should make the other man to be transported to the other world. No, no, no. It should not be the case. The other man should be encouraged to hear you. You should not speak at a high pedestal. Kasturi, being such a scholar, with fund of information, lot of Upanishadic literature, he has gone through Ramakrishna literature thoroughly, in depth every sentence, Aurobindo literature thoroughly. And we should also know that he is a renowned writer and poet in Kannada language. He is not an ordinary man. But he never took the opportunity to show his scholarship in public during the course of his talk. He chooses some instances. His talk is not to get into your head. It should get into your heart. His talk is not to make you appreciate his scholarship. His talk is to make you grow in devotion. His talk is not full of quotations. His talk meant for you to grow in faith, to love Swami more and more. That is the purpose of his talk. Not to quote profusely from different things and what you call bombastic style, vocabulary. The highest sounding words speak of confusion of the speaker. The ego of the speaker, which is not noticed in the case of Kasturi. He never uses any word which makes you refer the dictionary. He will never use a word which will make you lift your eyebrows in surprise. What a usage it is. Verbosity is pomp, exhibitionism and egoism. Total confusion, vanity of the speaker. But Kasturi is not like that. He used a simple language, clarity of expression, being an erudite scholar himself, a powerful, matchless, glorified writer for himself. How sweetly, nicely, simply speaks. It is a communication worthy of the statement heart to heart. It is worthy of the statement love to love. It is not out of the head to head, no. It is heart to heart. That's why when Kasturi narrates any incident, you will never forget for a lifetime. I remember all the things that he said long, long back in 70s. Why? His powerful expression. His simplicity. His humility. How endearing he is to all his devotees are really great. Are really great. And then Kasturi's technique is another thing. A single incident, he only is capable of that, gifted with that art of storytelling. 1 hour he can speak on one incident. Nobody will get up. No. There's no parallel. Perhaps if I am to say, you may call it an act of expression of audacity, but I am sincere in my statement. If Baba is number one in storytelling, number two will be Kasturi. Bhagwan's narration will keep everybody spellbound. So also Kasturi's. That's really grand.
So that was Professor Anil Kumar reflecting on the literary talent of Professor Kasturi. Definitely it was an unparalleled opportunity for Professor Kasturi when Swami blessed him with the chance of becoming the first editor of Sanatana Sarathi. But it was not with its own share of severe challenges, especially because those were the days when Puttaparthi did not even have a good road, let alone electricity, transport or a decent post office. And with the old manual typesetting letter press machine, which would take a skilled person a minimum of 2 days to compose one page, for Professor Kasturi, posting the magazine by the 16th of every month with the help of just one assistant in the first 2 years was an ordeal of indeed Garan Gutan proportions. In fact, he prayed for Almighty's blessings every minute to run the magazine. It was, as he used to say, a monthly miracle when the magazine finally came out of the press and was delivered in the homes of devotees. Just to give a glimpse of how complex it was those days to prepare this magazine every month, Professor Kasturi describes in his biography the entire process of printing and dispatching these copies as it happened then. This is what he writes. I quote, "For about a year, Narsimhachari, the sole helper at the treadle, put together the types, prepared the pages and peddled away to get 2 pages printed at a time. I offered to help him in the composing and in the footwork when I found him delaying the process or dozing. And," he says, "I was shocked when he accepted the offer whenever I made it. So poor Kasturi had to himself pedal at the treadle. The editor had to do every job of publishing this magazine." And reflecting on Narsimhachari's work, Professor Kasturi continues, "The job was really hard, though he lightened and brightened it, singing bhajans to himself." And he continues to say, "I was kept busy most of the day and even at few hours of the night, since the number of subscribers increased fast, money was sent by post or paid direct by devotees and pilgrims. The register of subscribers became more voluminous with every festival at Prashantanilayam. Thousands who came to the holy presence mired to ensure that the voice of the Lord should enter their doors at least once every month. For over 2 years, I and Narsimhachari bore the yoke. We were anxious to post the numbers at the newly opened Prashantanilayam post office on the 16th of every month, as announced in the very first copy. Devotees we knew would welcome it even more reverentially when they find on the wrapper on the right hand corner the circular frank mark of the post office with the name Prashantanilayam." In fact, Professor Kasturi was himself the postmaster for 8 months, and we'll come to that story later. So he continues, but a cutting machine which would trim the edges of the magazine was acquired only much later, long after a cylinder press was installed to cope with the 3,000 copies we had to print. At that time, they had to be trimmed at Bangalore City, 100 miles away. And he continues to narrate the ordeal of sending these printed copies to Bangalore to get them trimmed. Every month, he says, after the printing was over, I stuffed the quantity of English and Telugu magazines into two gigantic boxes, took them to Bukkapatnam on a bullock cart, had them lifted to the roof of the bus proceeding to Penukunda, ordered the bus to stop near the level crossing about 300 yards away from the Penukunda railway station. The boxes were brought down from the bus and a Tarzanian porter, Narasappa, carried them as headload to the platform. There, I awaited the arrival of the passenger train to Bangalore, 85 miles away, to book the boxes as freight. Reaching Bangalore, porters loaded them into horse-drawn vehicles, which I directed to a press that had a cutting machine. The boxes filled with trimmed copies were then taken to the house of a devotee in the heart of the city. I spent the night there with a dozen young men who volunteered to put the magazines into wrappers with the addresses on, and I had bought these wrappers from Prashantinilayam. The copies were now ready to be posted and we could sleep through the short hours of the night. And the next day I repeated the schedule while returning. Now, once the copies had been trimmed and the wrappers put with the addresses, they had to come back to Prashantinilayam. And it was the same rigor: horse, vehicle, porters, railway journey, Penukunda station, Narasappa, level crossing, bus till Bukkapatnam, bullock cart, and finally Prashantinilayam post office. And why it has to come back to Prashantinilayam? So that the holy name Prashantinilayam can be affixed the stamp of Prashantinilayam post office, can decorate this precious prasadam before it traveled to more than 3,000 homes. The devotees, of course, received it with reverence and they thanked the postman who brought the magazine, and many of them even put it in their altar before reading it. So this was the huge process that Professor Kasturi had to undergo at that time just to ensure that the copies are trimmed and posted with the stamp of Prashantinilayam. So that was the behind the scenes story of perfecting and posting the beautiful Sanatan Sarthi. But it was not drudgery all the time, because the divine was there lightening and brightening the burden at every available opportunity. Professor Kasturi narrates a very interesting, entertaining rather, and enlightening incident that happened in the second year of the magazine in his book Loving God. It's actually a popular and often quoted incident, but it is worth repeating. So let me say it again. This happened one evening in 1959. Baba sent someone to bring Kasturiji to his room in the mandir. And when he went to Baba's presence, Swami told him that the editor of a newspaper published from Hyderabad had asked for his photograph, for Kasturi sir's photograph, because he was announcing Kasturiji in his paper alongside a nice write-up as the editor of the Sanatana Sarathi. He wanted to announce to the world Professor Kasturi, the editor of Sanatana Sarathi. And Baba said, I have promised to send him your photograph, so you have to now go home and come prepared to be shot. And Swami said, I have selected a brand new camera specially for this purpose, so I am ready here to click. You go to your room, freshen up and come prepared so that we can have a beautiful picture sent to this editor in Hyderabad. And Kasturi sir says, oh, my joy knew no bounds. I rose to the 18th heaven. I rushed down the 18 steps to reach home for a quick facelift and returned to the presence, to his presence, within minutes, shaved and starched with a big broad smile on my face. And then Baba held me by the shoulders, adjusted my dress and positioned me at an appropriate distance. And now Swami peered through the lens and congratulated me on my photogenic face. I was elated that my picture will now catch the eye of at least 30,000 readers all over Andhra Pradesh. They will know that Professor Kasturi is the editor of Sanatan Sarthi. My smile swelled into a toothless grin. And now Baba gestured and I swallowed the grin in one gulp. Baba cautioned me, "Steady, steady." And he clicked. And what happened at that moment was a black hairy blotch with a flashing tail bounced on my neck from inside the camera. Suddenly, with a shrill screech, Kasturi sir hopped into the corner of the room because some horrid hairy object fell on him. Was it a rat? Was it dead? What was that? And he says, it was a quartered mouse that was cunningly tucked inside the dummy camera to be released when clicked. And now Swami was heartily laughing, looking at the plight of Professor Kasturi. And Professor Kasturi says, I too laughed to relieve the tension. And then he writes, Baba reprimanded me mildly for swallowing the story he had invented to deflate my ego. He reminded me that my being the editor was not the kind of news which the world was interested in. Lasting fame is to be sought not through newspapers, which turn into waste paper the very next morning. Lasting fame is to be sought through dedicated service to God and the godly. I left his room a leaner and wiser man. Baba mercifully helps us slowly but subtly to shed the burden of the ego. He advises that we should be just ourselves and not wear masks behind which we hide. In fact, what Baba told him after this is very significant. He says, Swami said, what greater status can you attain than being the medium for packaging and posting my message to thousands of devotees every month? What greater status can you attain than being the medium for packaging and posting my message to thousands every month? This is what Swami asked Professor Kasturi. And he says, the professor says, Baba is too bright a sun for human eyes. We can bask and bathe in sunlight, but we cannot gaze at Baba. He ends this beautiful incident with these words. This is how Swami was chiseling and creating this ideal editor out of Professor Kasturi. After he brought this magazine into existence, the Sarathi then was half the current size and bilingual, with articles in English first and then in Telugu. Now, of course, it comes in color and even has an EPUB version meant for tablets and iPads. So the training of and molding of Professor Kasturi by Baba never ended. And it continued till his very last moments. In fact, there is another very beautiful anecdote, again very revealing, narrated by Professor Nanjundaya, the former controller of examinations of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, who has spent many years watching and working with Professor Kasturi.
I would like to recall a few of the incidents which show the type of man that Professor Kasturi was and the kind of guru that he had chosen and found in Swami. These are very much interrelated. One or two incidents I could mention, how Swami pricks the bubble of ego and saves his real devotees from ego. He doesn't like any of his devotees for whom he has love and concern to develop that kind of ego. Professor Kasturi himself mentioned, in Prasadalayam in the mandir, Kasturi was going to see Bhagwan in the first floor. On the way, a friend of his, a old-time friend, accosted him, he had come to Prasanthalam on some work, especially to meet Bhagwan and get his blessings. When he saw Professor Kasturi, he felt as if he has got heaven itself, because he could convey to Swami and get an interview from Swami. With all kind of familiarity, he accosted Professor Kasturi and told him, "You should help me, should recommend my case to Bhagwan. Bhagwan should give me an interview. Please don't say no. You must do this," he said. Professor Kasturi is a very, very nice person. He didn't want to hurt him. He didn't want to contradict. He didn't reply also. He replied in another way, "I have to go to Swami," he said, and he went in. He reached Swami. And Professor Kasturi wanted to tell certain things to Swami. He allowed him to convey. Then Swami asked him, "What happened when you were coming up to me?" And Professor Kasturi immediately did not get Swami. "No, on the way, what happened?" For which Professor Kasturi said, "Oh, that's Swami. Some fellow, some old friend, he met me on the way. What did he tell you?" "He tells all sorts of things, Swami." "What did he tell you? Be more specific." "Swami, you know everything, but he wanted an interview from you." "Is that all? But did he tell anything more?" "You recommend my case," he told me, "Swami." You know this. Then Swami said, "Oh ho, recommendation. You have grown so big in Prasanthalayam as to recommend other people's cases to Swami. Oh ho, go and tell him." "No, no, Swami, I am not that Swami," Professor Kasturi said. "I am an ordinary fellow, Swami. I am just the dust of your lotus feet. Can I recommend anyone to you, Swami?" But he thought so many things and he told me, "Go and tell him now," Swami said. "Go and tell him. Do you know what you should tell? Tell him that I am nobody here. I am just an ordinary fellow here. Can any person recommend about others to Swami? Swami is God. Can I do that? Please don't expect me to do such things. I am really nobody here. You tell him and come back." He went, and the whole thing gets focused when we realize that that person was stone deaf. So whatever Professor Kasturi tells, he would not be able to hear or understand. Then he went to his friend and with a serious face, he said, "I am nobody here." And that gentleman thought that Professor Kasturi, being a very clever, capable person, has obtained permission. He began speaking in the veranda, in the hearing of every person, "Oh, I am so happy that you have got permission from Swami. I am getting an interview from Swami." "No, no. No, no." "Swami has given permission to you," he was telling. "Don't you know that I am nobody?" He was not able to understand. He was in his own world, expecting permission from Swami. And he had to repeat that twice, thrice, made everyone hear about that Swami is God, no one can recommend, I am only a very ordinary fellow, what can I do here, don't expect such things from me and all that. And at last, after he repeated twice or thrice, probably he must have understood a little, then he withdrew and went up. And Swami, like a child, asked him, "What did you ask?" "This is what he asked, Swami. What did you say?" "This is what I told Swami." "Good," Swami said. So this may look a little, for a person who really doesn't understand Swami's love for Professor Kasturi, it may look very unkind way of humiliating him and all that. But that's not it. It was only to make the world know that the Swami no such recommendations, one thing. Secondly, Professor Kasturi, even in his dream, should not feel that ego is an important thing. One should be egoless here. One should be very humble here. One should always feel and be aware of the fact that he is only a very ordinary person who has come seeking God and God's grace rather than anything else. That was how it happened.
So that was Professor Nanjundaya narrating a beautiful incident where Swami, so concerned about Professor Kasturi's spiritual growth, that he ensured that even an iota of ego never entered his personality. And this choiceless disciple of the Supreme Master did live up to the Master's expectations on occasions that are too numerous to even enumerate. Miss Julius, a septuagenarian Sai devotee from United Kingdom, who had spent many days in the ashram listening to Kasturi's talks in the 1980s, she says, I quote, "Even if Swami had made Mr. Kasturi turned stone into wine in front of our eyes, we would have accepted it because we knew he would have just said, 'Oh, it's not me, it's Swami.' He wouldn't ever dream of arrogance. That is what made him everybody's dream godfather beside their bed, telling them bedtime stories about God and the universe, and you were just taken in. I don't think he ever thought he was giving anything of his own. He was interpreting to us what Swami had given him. I don't think he ever thought of himself or realized that he had wisdom. No way, absolutely. He knew and was completely aware that Swami had allowed him to be Kasturi. And truly, nobody can ever be like him, just like nobody can ever be like Shakespeare or Hamlet. They are all totally unique. They are made specially. They are made forever. I would say personally that the most outstanding concept and attribute of Professor Kasturi was this, Miss Julia says. He emanated love with humility. And Professor Anil Kumar says that humility is what reflected in Professor Kasturi's personality, his body language, and also in his beautiful voice.
People may come and go. There may be many speakers, many in the past, many in the present, many more in future. But none can equal Kasturi in the art of speaking. There were many writers in the past. There are many writers now. There may be many more writers in future, both from India and abroad. None can equal Professor Kasturi in the art of writing. Poetic style, nectarine language. Beautiful, convincing style, the soft and tender, appealing, devoted voice. That softness in him itself is the reflection of the depth of his devotion. Some people, philosophers say, a man of devotion will have soft voice. It is only rajasic voice that is so harsh, such as the one that you are hearing now. My voice is so harsh. Still I am rajasic because of pickles I eat, I believe. But Kasturi's voice was so soft because he's sattvic to the core, to the core.
So that was the saintly nature of Professor Kasturi. And ask anybody who has seen and interacted with Professor Kasturi, and they say if simplicity and humility was his first nature, humor was his second. Mrs. Jailashmi Gopinath, the warden of the Anandpur campus of Bhagwan's University, who served in this position for many years and currently now resides in the Prashantinilayam ashram, she saw Professor Kasturi when she was in her teens. And till now, that image of Professor Kasturi is very clear in her mind.
And my father's unit and Mr. Kasturi's units were side by side. That is how I could often see him. And as a young girl, I had a great deal of reverence for him. You could ask me the question why. Because in my mind, I had a picture of a cultured Hindu Indian. And he was typical of that. He would always wear spotless white dhoti and put that, whatever you call it, at the back, a thing we call it the gochi or whatever it is. He was pretty tall, broad-shouldered, he's always straight, and he would have a white, clean white jubba right up till the knees. No ostentation about him. He was a great intellectual as far as I know. He had earned a name for himself when he was in Karnataka. And he was a professor too. And on his forehead, you would find the marks of vibhuti standing out. And in the middle, a kumkum spot. A perfect Hindu, a perfect Indian, a person who exuded the Indian culture. Because in spite of all his attainments, he was never ostentatious. But he had a dignity of his own. And as I said just now, I used to admire him for so many things as a young girl. One, because I felt he was so near and dear to Swami. All the time he would be with Swami. And the same way, whatever it was, whatever function it was, the same attire. And Swami would always call him, you see, to give some speeches to the devotees. And as I said, he was also very erudite in English. He would speak in simple, lucid English, so that those who knew English could easily understand him. There was no show, but the most wonderful aspect of it was, with all his devotion and reverence for Bhagavan, he would spice it with a lot of humor.
So that was Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath. And as she mentioned, there was this beautiful witty side to the personality of Professor Kasturi. Humor was always there in his speech. There was always this fascinating aspect of his personality. Mr. B. N. Narasimha Murthy, who had many years of association with Professor Kasturi, experienced this many times because he lived with him at very close quarters. He moved with him, he traveled with him on many occasions. And here is one instance where he recollected how he saw this beautiful, interesting aspect of humor in Professor Kasturi's life.
Once I remember, in Mangalore, he was giving a talk. 2 hours it went on, and nobody knew it was 2 hours about Swami. And I had his bus ticket. The bus would leave at 9:30 in the night. And already, you know, we had decided 8:30 he will close his talk, he will have his dinner and go. It went on till 9, talk. Then, you know, I was slightly on the side. I just wrote a big chit and held up. BUS bus. I wrote it end up like this. Then he looked at her. See, Narasimhamurthy is telling me in Hindi, bus. Stop. He's telling me. Then I said, no sir, the bus is leaving at 9:30. And then immediately wound up. No dinner, nothing. Straight to bus stand and we came off from there. So that way, you know, he had, timely inspiration in his talks was something really very great. A lot of them actually, which I can't speak or write also, quite a lot of them. Maybe later, at a later time I can do that. Very amazing, which nobody had such experiences with Swami.
So that was a spontaneity in the humor of Professor Kasturi. If humor was dominant in his character, it was only surpassed by his humility. And as Miss Julia said, that was the most evident aspect of his persona, humility. For Mr. Sanjay Sahani, the current principal of the Vrindavan campus, the most cherished chapter of Kasturiji's biography, Loving God, is the chapter, The Chiseled Child. And how the Lord ensured that Professor Kasturi exuded that superlative humility is simply fabulous. Here is Sanjay Sahani, sir.
In his autobiography, Loving God, there are any number of experiences which he has narrated. But the chapter, Chiseled Child, is something which is very dear to my heart. because it brings out for every devotee how Swami is not merely our God, but also our Guru, who prunes us, guides us, so that we rise to our own divine nature. In that fascinating book, Kasturiji has recorded how when he came to Swami, there were so very few men around at Prashantinilayam. And therefore, whenever any work had to be taken up, everybody would have to volunteer. And therefore, though by profession he was a teacher, a professor, a former principal of a college, yet when he came to Bhagwan, he would have to carry out any number of errands for which he had no training and no background. Once the postmaster general at Hyderabad came up with a proposal to start a post office at Prashantinilayam, provided a pensioner of some local authority or government authority was willing to become the postmaster. When they looked around, Professor Kasturi found that he was the only person qualified to take up the job. And swallowing his ego, he volunteered to become the postmaster. Professor Kasturi very beautifully describes, Swami was very carefully observing his reactions. And Swami said, "Professor Kasturi, postmaster, somehow it doesn't sound appropriate." And Kasturi also was a person to match Swami. He said, "Swami, not any postmaster, postmaster of Prashantinilayam." With that simple episode, Professor Kasturi explained how when we take to the service of Swami, we should forget ourselves and always remind ourselves that wherever our need is the utmost, we should be there and should be ready to take up any work. In the course of his work, it is also important that we don't feel that we are too important and indispensable. In the course of his any number of duties, one of the important assignments that Professor Kasturi used to have was during the festival times, he would have to make announcements in different languages for people to maintain the decorum and discipline of the ashram. On one such occasion, when the festival was about to commence and such an announcement had to be made, Professor Kasturi was not there at the appropriate time. In retrospect, he realized that that was also a manifestation of his ego. When you know that a particular work has to be done and you are required to do it, and at the appropriate time you are missing, means that you want to be called there. That means you are so important that you have to be summoned there. Swami, on that particular occasion, never sent for Professor Kasturi. The work was assigned to somebody else, and that particular task was forever lost to Professor Kasturi. So he used to explain through his personal experiences to us how we should take up the seva of Swami and be ready to take up that seva in the way Swami would like us to do.
In fact, it is this sense of service without any ego, coupled with humility and humor, which not only made Professor Kasturi a favorite Sai brother in the ever-expanding Sai family, but also endeared him to the Lord the most. And that is how Professor Kasturi was the Lord's chosen instrument for a variety of valuable roles in his divine mission. and he dedicated all his God-gifted talent as a proficient linguist, as an excellent writer, talented playwright, scintillating speaker, expert dramatist, brilliant biographer, passionate professor of history, inspired social reformer, sincere humanist, master storyteller, gem of a journalist, and a spirited spiritual seeker. Every facet of his illustrious personality was dedicated to serve in his divine mission with utmost proficiency. More importantly, with utmost humility and gratitude. And as Mr. Sanjay Sahni was narrating, he was also the man for announcements in Prashanthi Nilayam. Though he lost that opportunity sometime later, and that was also because Swami wanted him to grow on the spiritual path. But in the early days of the ashram, Baba was particular that the devotees be informed about rules and regulations, schedules and safety precautions whenever there was a considerable congregation, and he would always beckon Mr. Kasturi to do it. And this soft-spoken senior member of the Sai family, Professor Kasturi, would candidly and clearly convey the message in 6 languages: English, Telugu, Kannada, Malayalam, Tamil and Hindi, one after another. And countless were the occasions when he called on this master orator to speak, as Dr. Jayalakshmi Gopinath was recounting. And Kasturiji would passionately and perfectly share the mysteries and the miracles, the manifestations and the mahimas of the avatar, not only in his physical presence but also elsewhere. And he really loved doing this to the hilt. In fact, Mr. Ramesh Kasturi, his grandson, recalls whenever Professor Kasturi was sick with cold or fever, Swami used to tell him, "Hey, poi lecture chahi, ade niko bhiksha." Meaning, "Hey, you go and speak about Swami. That lecture itself is your medicine." And it was so wonderfully true. He always forgot himself once he started the story of the Lord's glory. In fact, that was his sustenance, and he conveyed this truth of his life to his beloved, to his Baba, on so many occasions. But on one occasion he did it so skillfully and so spontaneously. Let's listen to this anecdote narrated by Mr. B. N. Narasimha Murthy, because this is so sweet and at the same time so profound.
And once, you know, you told us one very beautiful incident that happened way back. That was the time when East Prashanthi had not come up. In fact, East Prashanthi was the first building to come up for the devotees. And those days, it should be in the late 50s, there are only 2 cottages on the right side of Mandir. And 2 cottages on the left side. Very simple tiled roof buildings. And one of the cottages, Kasturiji was staying on the right side. Left side, if I remember correctly, Sri Rajareddy used to live there. And Swami, you know, those days, you know, not many devotees around, without announcing he would visit houses. He'll go to one house, from there he'll go to another house, and nobody knows where he would go. And one day, such an unannounced visit, Swami went in and Kasturi was all alone. Kasturi was sitting on a chair and like a small child enjoying a doll of a bear actually, and a kettle drum tied to its waist, small doll. And it was playing on the kettle drum. And there was a spring mechanism, it would make it do that. And when Swami entered, he didn't notice Swami. And he was looking at that, you know, like a child, he was enjoying that. And then Swami, without talking to Kasturi, just thrust his hand forward and pushed that doll. And it fell down on its back. When it fell down its back, you know, it was playing, because that spring power was still there. And then you know, Kasturi got up with a start. And Swami told Kasturi ji, "Hey Kasturi, neeku itle chestan nenu. I will do the same thing to you." And you know what he said? "Swami, if you do the same thing to me, I will also do the same thing as that doll is doing. Even if you push me backward, I am going to play. I am going to announce to the world about the avatar." That's what, I mean, that was a kind of unique relation we had.
So that is the beautiful incident narrated by Mr. B. N. Narasimha Murthy. Indeed, if you look at the life of this great soul, right from the time the Lord drew him near, every cell of his body and ounce of his energy has been spent only in speaking and sharing, collecting and circulating the Lord's stories and glories, whatever may be the challenges and constraints, difficulties and deadlines. In the initial days of Sanatan Sarathi, with no professional or skilled help of any kind, be it in writing and editing to printing, pasting and parceling, it was a tremendous responsibility for Professor Kasturi to ensure that the issue, flawless in every aspect, reached the readers on time. And in spite of his age and position, Kasturi took to every task with equal enthusiasm and interest. For him, the documentation and dissemination of Swami's life and message was the only guiding principle and goal in life. And towards this end, he was ever alert, agile and eager to go to any length. In fact, Professor Nanjundaya says, "I would not be wrong if I say he is Valmiki and Vyasa to Bhagwan, the avatar of the age." In fact, I would add that Professor Kasturi was more effectively suited than Valmiki and Vyasa because he had access to Swami and could directly interact with him to seek clarifications about his discourses and writings. Today, Baba's life, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, is more historic than Ramayana or Mahabharata. And for this, Professor Kasturi was Swami's chosen instrument. But it is not as if the life of this great devotee of the Lord was all honky-dory as one might imagine it to be. Not many know that his life actually was a series of tragedies. His personal life was riddled with terrible losses, disappointments and diseases in the family. In fact, the number of devastating moments in his life was way above the ordinary. His life partner, Mrs. Rajamma, who was his pillar of strength and support, was paralyzed for 11 years and predeceased him. He lost his elder son at the prime of his life, just when he was blossoming into a promising adult. At the age of 85, he had to see his another son die at 60. His daughter's marital life was beset with ongoing problems. And these are just a few of his life's dreadful moments. But as Professor Anil Kumar says, the great Kasturi never for a moment put on a melancholic face.
Whenever Swami tested him by keeping him at a distance, of course part of divine romance, or chides him or accuses him or criticizes him or reprimands him or corrects him, whatever you want to say, only in the interest of Kasturi so that he might evolve along the path of devotion, Kasturi never complained. During the period of test, he never complained to anybody. He has never put on a sorrowful, melancholic face. He never bored others with his own episode of the period of test so that the other man will lose the existing joy. He will never make anybody out of moods by narrating his own tragic moments. He never said it. He just swallows that period of test and spreads joy. Garalakanta, swallowing the poison, keeping to the throat, shedding the coolness. The Sivatattva is in practice in the life of Professor Kasturi. He practiced what he said. He never says. That's really great. Because when people, when during a favorable period, they will be in airs. They don't talk to anybody, they think they are on the top. But when once they are out of that honeymoon period, when they pass through the period of test, they will be depressed and frustrated such that they will make the all surroundings equally miserable. But Kasturi is an exception. He swallows within himself, spreads. He lives in hope that this is also for my good. Swami wants me to evolve. This is really fantastic, which we have to learn. To maintain that uniformity, to maintain that conformity, to maintain that entity, to maintain the gravity and the intensity of devotion is a lesson that we have to learn from him. From his personal life, there's nothing to feel happy. He lost his son. His daughter was also left by his son-in-law. She was alone. He lost his wife, he lost his son, and his daughter, only daughter, was also deserted. How do you find that man smile all along? What made him to stay here? He saw the death of his son in front of him. He was there at the graveyard. Just imagine the situation. He never left Bhagwan. He never left this place. He never blamed Bhagwan. He just took it in the course of life. Events come and pass off. When Baba says, obstacles and troubles come and pass off like passing clouds, very good to repeat, but very difficult to take it. That is translated in action and reality in the life and work of Professor Kasturi. No one has faced as many difficulties as Professor Kasturi. But he never complained. He never told me these things. These are things that I heard from others. He never shared his grievances. In fact, he never had it. He never took it that way. That is the example that we have to learn from him.
In fact, when Professor Kasturi's son, who was a reputed geologist, retired and soon after passed away because of an ailment, all Kasturi said was, "His station has come." So he got down. "Mine has not yet come." And his daughter Padma Kasturi says, "Truly it was Swami who gave him that courage and stoicism. Even though he was living with us as if very emotionally involved, from within he was very detached. In fact, many a times I used to wonder," she says, "as sometimes I felt he was very much attached, because whenever my sons came from Bangalore, he was very endearing to them. But at other times I used to feel that he was very detached. So one day, Padma Kasturi asked him, 'Father, I'm not able to understand you. Why is it that sometimes you are so wonderful that I feel you are very much attached, but at other times you seem to be so very removed?' And then Professor Kasturi said, 'Oh, I am duping you too. See how well I am playing my drama.'" So Padma Kasturi says, so that is how it was. Everything for him was just a game. And this is something that Mrs. Padma Kasturi could not take it. She was getting confused and many times even frustrated. In fact, one day when Professor Kasturi returned home after a lecture to foreign devotees, Padma Kasturi simply burst out. She said, "Father, what is this? You go and talk for hours on how Swami helped this person or rescued that person. But what has he done for you? Your wife is sick. For 11 years she has been lying on the bed, and see my problems. I'm alone. What is the use of you going and talking for hours to other people when there is so much suffering at home?" And Professor Kasturi listened to everything that she said calmly, and then replied, "Padma, it is okay for you to talk in this vein, but I don't want Swami to do anything for me or my family. Whatever he does, he is perfect, he is God. I have that faith in him. Whomever he does it to, I consider them as my own. I don't have any attachment with you, my family, or my wife. From your point of view, what you're saying is perhaps appreciable, but I do not have the feeling at all that Swami must do some miracle for me, for my family, or for my persons." This is what Professor Kasturi told his daughter. That is how selfless this servant of the Lord was. Nothing in the world mattered for him except Swami and his mission and his message. And that is the reason why the Lord simply loved to be with him, loved to play with him, loved to take him along wherever he went, loved to make him his biographer, his translator, his companion. And also made that prophetic declaration that Professor Kasturi would be born as the mother of Prema Sai. the message that Sanatana Sarathi has been carrying and still continues to carry is encapsulated in the life story of its first editor. The principle of selfless service, the principle of universal love. In fact, Baba, on 59th birthday, in that year, Swami himself wrote a poem for this sacred magazine, which reflects not only the heart of Professor Kasturi, but indeed of every spiritual aspirant. And this poem goes like this. I do not need any riches, for why should I? A carefree mind is enough, O Father, that is a million for me. I shall not yearn for fortune, for why should I? A smile-lit face is enough, O Father. Your face is enough for me, that is a million for me. I shall not pine and want, for why should I? A glance from thy eye is enough, O Father, that is a million for me. I shall not crave for wealth, for why should I? The joy of being thine is enough, O Father, that is a million for me. Enough for me these things I have, whatever thou hast gifted me with. Why think of getting more? I will have them whenever thou wishest. Enough for me thy undiminishing grace, which falls on all whom thou hast blessed. With the words, this one is mine. All we need to aspire for in life is for God to say, you are mine. And that will happen when we wholeheartedly feel and say, Lord, I need nothing but you. You are mine. You alone is all I need. In fact, Swami always says that you are mine. It is only we who have to clean our inner self so that we hear his voice distinctly, so that we can allow him to direct our life, so that we can hand him over the reins of our life, so that he can truly be and act that eternal charioteer that he is, the Sanatana Sarathi that he is, and lead us to victory, just like he did with Arjuna, and he's doing with us. Even now, only we have to let go our ego and let him enter, let God enter. Dear listeners, on this holy occasion, when we celebrate the 56th birth anniversary of Sanatana Sarathi and think of this sterling life of Professor Kasturi, let's ruminate on these aspects and sanctify the remaining hours, the remaining years of our life. With this, as the clock marches on, it's 10 o'clock in the studios of Radio Sai, and it's time to wind up this episode of Outside, Inside and Deep Inside. Dear listeners, please do share your feedback to this program. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. If you want to listen to this program, if you missed any parts of this program, if you tuned in late or anything of that sort, you can download this program from Thursday Live Archives of our website, radiosai.org. Please do listen and tell us what you feel about not only this program, but everything that you hear on Radio Sai. With this, I will have to bring the curtains down on this last leg of Thursday Live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. And even as I sign off, 10 minutes from now, you will listen to a drama staged during Chinese New Year celebrations on 13th February 2008 in the Divine Presence. It is entitled Eyelid That Protects the Eye. So this is coming to you 10 minutes from now. Keep listening. Keep thinking of him. And let's fill our lives with his love, his work and his glory. Thank you so much for being with us. And finally, a sweet goodbye and loving Sairam from all of us in Prashantinilayam. Sairam.